Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today, WGXC's correspondent Rob Gellis will speak with Todd Smith, who attended the Hudson Boys and Girls Club as a youth and later managed the Hudson Youth Center. He'll talk about the role the Youth Center played in his life with Rob Gellis on his Rob Around the County segment later this hour. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network, on air, in air, waves, controlled. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org. and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Michelle Del Rey is reporting for the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul announced on February 27th that the state school mask mandate will end March 2nd, allowing children in New York to attend class without face coverings unless localities issue their own mandates. New York Commissioner of Health Dr. Mary Bassett joined Hochul at the press conference. The mask mandates at SUNY and CUNY colleges and universities will remain in effect. Quote, "My friends, the day has come," unquote, Hochul said. Quote, "This is a huge thank you to all the school district superintendents, the school boards, the administrators, the principals, the teachers, the parents, and the children themselves. We stood together as a state," unquote. While masking in New York schools will no longer be required by the state, Hochul is also leaving it to localities to decide whether to continue mask mandates in schools. Some districts are expected to announce that they will not require masks, but will permit students and employees who want to continue wearing them to do so. Under the new U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention metrics released February 24th, most of New York is either at low or medium risk for COVID-19, and federal officials no longer recommend indoor masking, including in schools, in areas of low to medium risk. Read more about this story in the Times Union. The Columbia County Democratic Committee on February 25th announced its slate of endorsements for the 2022 elections. the CCDC met on February 24th and conducted its annual endorsement meeting, considering candidates up and down the ballot. Quote, "This is an exciting year for Democrats," unquote, said Sam Hodge, the CCDC chair, in a press release. Quote, "We have an incredible slate of candidates that are ready to work hard for our county," unquote. The CCDC, quote, "enthusiastically and unanimously endorsed the hardest-working, most effective and dynamic congressman in the United States, Antonio Delgado," unquote, according to the committee's statement. The committee cited Delgado's, quote, "tireless," unquote, work to, quote, "bring much-needed money and services to CD19. He was voted most bipartisan member of Congress. He has passed 18 pieces of legislature into law under both Republican and Democratic administrations, all of which were for the benefit of his constituents in CD19, unquote. The committee is also supporting incumbent State Senator Michelle Hinchey in the 48th Senate District, challenger Jamie Cheney in the 43rd Senate District, and Dede Barrett in her sixth consecutive 106th Assembly District race. Cheney is a small business owner, mother, and farmer. The committee also endorsed candidates in statewide races, supporting Kathy Hochul's run for governor, as well as Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin, Attorney General Letitia James, and State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Quote, "We couldn't ask for a better ticket," unquote, said Hodge. Quote, "These are the leaders we need right now, and the CCDC is excited to begin the work to win," unquote. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that for months, former Governor Andrew Cuomo has argued through his attorney, Rita Glavin, that he never sexually harassed any of the women who have accused him of inappropriate behavior. Less than a year after his resignation, after 11 accusations of sexual harassment, he is now dipping into his campaign funds to pay for TV ads in an effort to restore his image. Cuomo will release a statewide TV ad attempting to repudiate the claims leveled against him. Quote, "The governor hasn't challenged the credibility of a number of them," unquote, Glavin said this month. Quote, "What they are alleging simply doesn't rise to the level of sexual harassment," unquote. The ad is expected to air statewide, and the cost will exceed six figures. It is not clear what the content of the ads will be, and a spokesperson for Cuomo said multiple versions are being considered. In addition to the allegations of sexual harassment, Cuomo and his administration were accused of undercounting nursing home fatalities during the pandemic, as well as public accusations of bullying and a toxic work environment within his office. Some observers, like Syracuse University Public Affairs Professor Grant Reicher, say Cuomo's timing raises questions. Quote, "Frankly, this is another way in which Andrew Cuomo reminds me of Donald Trump, the inability to accept political defeat, political failure," unquote, he said. Cuomo resigned in August, weeks after a report detailing allegations by 11 women of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior. His image has been battered in the courts of public opinion, but Marist pollster Lee Mingeroff said the former governor still has a lot of work to do to convince voters. Mingeroff said, quote, "He has a very defined image, for good and for bad, and the question is, how does he reshape that," unquote. "It's hard to do when he's been on the stage for as long as he has," unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Composer Anthony Miller moves freely between klezmer-influenced jazz and modern music, and we'll hear a piece written for ensemble on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Rachel Miller, Trevor Wishart, Ant the Symbol, and Ed Wright. Deep Threes, where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, February 28th. 16.1% of the way through the year, just 20 days left until spring. Early this morning, we have a report of 1.5 inches in Richmondville. Temperatures range from 5 degrees in Mackey to 19 in St. Joseph. The day will be sunny, but conditions will be sub-freezing this morning, so bundle up and protect skin if going outside. A high of 28 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 14 degrees before midnight, then gradually warm up, hitting 19 degrees by dawn, then 43 degrees by 3 p.m. on Tuesday. However, don't get too excited. Mixed rain and snow along with wind gusts are coming along. Snow increasing after dark. No accumulation is expected, even though temperatures will reach 28 degrees by dawn on Wednesday. Then a mostly dry day with a high of 45. Then, after dark, 27 degrees on the thermometer and a quarter inch of snowfall takes us into a dry Thursday with a high of 31. Friday holds the pattern with a low of 11 degrees and a high of 32. The hottest temperature expected this week is 49 degrees. The coldest temperature expected this week is 10. Sunset today will be at 5:29 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see we are now inside the unexpected plasma stream. Whoa, that's not unexpected. It was totally expected. I told you guys about that last week. Minor geomagnetic unrest is expected. Solar wind speed is currently 513.1 kilometers per second at 9.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 48. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christina Bonesack of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, subversive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under Edict Number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses. Okay, have fun, everybody. All right.
from the year 2021. That was New York United, collaborating with Tobias Wilner and Daniel Carter there on reeds with the song The Grind.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We will fight as long as it takes to liberate the country. If children are born in shelters, even when the shelling continues, then the enemy has no chance in this undoubtedly people's war.
Speaking through a translator, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky defied what he called brutal Russia's attacks. But he also said they'll give long-shot peace talks at the Belarus border a chance. At least 350 civilians in Ukraine have been killed since the invasion began Thursday. As of last night, stiff Ukrainian resistance had repeatedly repelled Russian attempts to take the capital Kiev and other large cities amid intense shelling and rocket attacks. Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his country's nuclear forces on high alert following what he called aggressive statements by NATO countries. The UN will hold an emergency session today that could allow for all 139 members to call for Russia's immediate withdrawal. It'll only be the 11th such meeting since 1950. Meanwhile, Ukraine asked the International Criminal Court in The Hague to impose reparations on Russia, accusing Moscow of planning genocide. Around the world, protests in support of Ukraine were held, including in Washington, D.C. Reports say more than 2,000 anti-war protesters have been arrested in Russia. Those charged could face heavy fines and jail time for protesting without a permit. Members of Congress are back in Washington this week, signaling bipartisan support of economic aid for Ukraine. Chair of the Senate Ukraine Caucus, Rob Portman of Ohio, told Cleveland rallygoers he'll meet with the Ukrainian ambassador to the UN today.
We're going to talk about the humanitarian aid that's needed to help to combat these cyber attacks, because this war has been going on for 8 years, to combat the disinformation that is flooding into Ukraine every single day, to ensure that we are tightening these sanctions.
Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee believes additional sanctions are also needed.
Putin has called this an operation, but it is not an operation. And all of the NATO allies who are freedom-loving, they have acknowledged that this is sheer brutality.
The Biden administration is expected to ask Congress for $6 billion in economic and military aid. Former President Donald Trump used his speech at this weekend's Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida as an opportunity to claim that the Russian invasion would never have occurred under his watch.
The problem is not that Putin is smart, which of course he's smart, but the real problem is that our leaders are dumb. Putin is playing Biden like a drum.
Trump teased a 2024 presidential run and later emerged as the clear winner in the conference's straw poll. Nearly 60% of those asked support Trump as the GOP nominee, while 28% support Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Tom Rowe in the WGXC newsroom in Accra with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. CNN reports that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now says that most people in the United States live in areas where those who are healthy do not need to wear masks indoors. Still, 28% of Americans live in a county where they need to wear masks indoors. Previously, CDC pointed to levels of coronavirus transmission within communities as a key metric for restrictions and recommended that people in areas with high or substantial levels of transmission, about 99% of the population, should wear masks indoors. Quote, "We are in a better place today than we were 6 months ago, 6 weeks ago, 6 days ago," unquote, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra said in a statement to CNN. Quote, "Now it's time to focus on severity, not just cases of COVID. Because of all the hard work that's been done and the many tools we've developed to tackle COVID, we can ease the guidance on mask use. Not everyone in every place needs to wear a mask," unquote. Since the CDC's message is not crystal clear, expect many people to just hear the part about not wearing masks anymore. Read more about the story at CNN's website. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that on February 24th, Dutchess County Democrats unanimously picked retired Deputy Jillian Hanlon, the first openly transgender person in the office's history, as the Democratic candidate for sheriff. Former Sheriff Butch Anderson passed away in late 2021, and in his absence, Undersheriff Kirk Imperardi has been serving as the acting sheriff. Governor Kathy Hochul has hinted she may appoint someone to fill out the term, but has not acted so far. Hanlon retired from the sheriff's office in 2021 after a 24-year career and now becomes the first woman in the county's history to run for Dutchess County Sheriff. If she wins against Imperardi, she would be the first transgender sheriff in the country and only the second female sheriff in New York. Quote, "It's an historic campaign, and it's time to change the old boys network," unquote, Hanlon said February 25th. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. The Daily Star reports that Assemblyperson Chris Tague, a Republican from Schoharie who represents Greene County, was appointed this week as vice chair of the Joint Conference Committee. Quote, "I am honored to have the opportunity to serve in this role and get to work to address the challenges facing the people of the 102nd Assembly District and New York State as a whole," unquote, Tague said in a press release. Quote, "As always, it will be my mission to ensure our state government works for all New Yorkers, from the rolling hills of Schoharie County to the towering skyscrapers of Manhattan. I want to thank Leader Will Barclay and all of my colleagues in the Republican Assembly Conference for their vote of confidence in my abilities. I look forward to continuing to work alongside them to make our state the most safe, prosperous, and free place it can be," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Star. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. On Reed's Chad Fowler on piano, Matthew Shipp. That was Chapter 8, 2020 track on the radio at WGXC.
And I'm Tom Rowe, live in Accra with the WGXC Morning Show. And I can't hear that sound. Can you hear that sound?
They're installing solar power on the top of the wave farm right now.
Hopefully soon we'll be the solar-powered voice of the Hudson Valley on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. But next, our Rob Gellis is standing by to speak with Todd Smith, who attended the Hudson Boys and Girls Club as a youth and later managed the Hudson Youth Center. Here's Todd Smith talking to Rob Gellis about the Hudson Youth Center on the radio at WGXC.
And Girls Club, which is now Hudson Youth Center, which has been an integral part of my life. Without that, I would have had no foundation for anything that I ever did in my life. I mean, growing up, the Boys and Girls Club, it used to be the Hudson Boys Club by itself, just the Hudson Boys Club back when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And it was a place where kids from all over the city of Hudson, Greenport, Clawbrook, and all the surrounding areas used to congregate. You know, we had, it was set up in structures where there was, midget juniors, intermediates and seniors based on age group. 6 to 9 was the midget. 10 to 12 was the juniors. 13 to 15 were the intermediates. And the 16 to 18 were the seniors. That was based on the membership. And every year, you know, we come in and, you know, at a certain time, but certain kids were allowed, there's certain age groups were allowed at certain times. And it was so structured, like there was every night there was a game room activity, a tournament that would take place, whether it was air hockey, non-hockey, bumper pool, ping pong. There was always something going on upstairs. Same thing. There was always teams and there was rosters on the wall where, you know, what team you were on. And some nights it was kickball, volleyball, wiffle ball, basketball, flag football. I mean, it was always something. And they, you know, just, you're talking about bonding and being friendships with kids that didn't live in our community, but we ended up going to school with them. Once we hit the middle school, that's when all the schools came together. You know, from up to fifth grade, you know, they had Clawbrook School, they had a Greenport School, they had they had their schools. But once we all hit sixth grade, but by that time, we were all friends. We developed friendship growing up in the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, and and around the Boys and Girls Club, there were places that we loved to eat, like the snack bar was across the street, the Pizza Pit was around the corner, the Jersey Bakery was around the corner. I mean, those, the Paramount Grill, those things, you know, those were places that we all loved and we grew up in, and the people all knew each other. You know, if you came in there, you had short money, didn't have enough money, they give it to you. I mean, they allowed you to work. I mean, it was so important with the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, the staff we had, staff that were there for long term, you know, you come in at 6 year old, by the time you leave at 18, the staff was still the same. We had, I mean, the directors changed over the time, but you're talking about Mo Crank, who was involved with the Boys and Girls Club for over 50 years of his life.
Oh, Todd?
You talk about Ray Paul, Jerry Woods, Marty Freeman. These are all the executive directors during my tenure. Tony Teresiano. I mean, it was awesome. Pat Malloy, he was one of my first mentors.
Todd, I just wanted to again repeat, if people hadn't come in the beginning, that I'm speaking to Todd Smith, who grew up in Hudson, and his reminiscing of going to the Boys and Girls Club And you can continue. Pat Malloy is still involved.
Yeah, he's always been. He's gonna always be involved with youth. That's one thing I appreciate about him. You know, he was one of my first. Him and Mo Crank were like my first mentors, and they guided me, directed me in the right path. Like when I was like 11, 12 years old, they allowed me to start running activities in the gym. Mo Crank and Lenny Hughes, Jerry Woods, Miss Woody, Adam Nardowicz, Esther Finn. That was the team back in the 70s. And they allowed me to, they groomed me to become who I was. You know, I was allowed to volunteer on certain days. I used to be the one to run the store for them. Or some days when they had to run out real quick and we're in the gym, they allowed me to run activities. You know, I'm only a little kid myself, but, you know, but all the kids respected me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as a result, like my first summer job was a continuation of that. So they allowed me, like they created a position, recreation supervisor aide for the Department of Youth. And Woody was the director of, he was the executive director of the Department of Youth. So, and he was the director at the Boys and Girls Club. So he knew who I was, and they created this position for me to work the 7 playgrounds at the time. And I worked with the recreation supervisor. Well, the first year it was Louis Pirro, and then the next 2 years it was Pete Jablanski. And I would ride around with them in the Department of Youth truck to different playgrounds during the summer. And you know, when they took off or had, you know, emergency medical leaves or family or something, or their own sick time or whatever, I would have to ride my bike around to the 7 playgrounds and hold activities. So, you know, they all did a good job of mending me and molding me to be the person I am today. Over the time, growing up in the Boys and Girls Club, then it became the girls' night on Thursday. That they included girls on Thursday night. And it was funny because I was like the only boy, the only member allowed in on Thursday night when it was only for specifically for girls. And all my friends used to sit outside and be peeking in the window, you know, and I'm holding that activity for the girls. I was like, I think I was like 13 or 14 years old. And it was just fun, you know. But then, you know, as time went on, then I realized that, hey, I ended up actually working there as a program director. I started to know as a rec aide, and then I became a program director, then assistant director. And then it became the Hudson Youth Center. Now that it's the Hudson Youth Center, I went away. I went to work somewhere in another organization, and then Dick Tracy became the mayor. And so they brought back me and Dominic Moranti as the co-directors at the Hudson Youth Center. But now, over time, you know, I stopped in all the time there. But I with all the new directors that they had and new mayors, you know, they had me involved with at some point with the youth center, you know, and all the directors there, like Nick Zankos recently, you know, I met with him to help, you know, talk about my experiences there to make his job a lot easier. I told him, and then I ended up teaching boxing over the last 2 years there. That boxing is a big thing for me right now. So I've been teaching, and it's like 40. We wanted to start with like about 10 to 12 kids, a certain age, for half an hour, then do another half an hour. But it's like at certain days, it's like 40 kids. When I walk in the gym in the Boys and Girls Club, the youth center, the kids run up to me, Todd, Todd, Todd. Some days I'm just there, you know, they come in and say hi, and you know, but Thursday evening, they know it's boxing night, and so they all run up to the gym, and you know, we have a good time. I see that the things have changed, and now that what I see that the youth center is a lot educational now, which is so important with the changing times. You know, sports. They still have a lot of sports stuff going on, but the education part is so important. Teaching the kids how to use computers, social skills, how to cook, dancing, this stuff that's important to the growth of youth nowadays than it was back in our days. Back in our days, it was predominantly sports, you know, and you know, rough and tumble guys, you know, because it was a boys' club. But you know, as things change now we're seeing a different youth now. We, you know, we got to change with the times, and they're doing a great job down there. You know, I haven't had the opportunity to meet the new director, but I hear so much about her. But I know that they're going to continue to to provide the programs necessary for the youth to meet their needs. I mean, it's so important. And the boy, like I said, the Boys and Girls Club, the Hudson Youth Center, the Hudson Boys Club has always been so dear to my heart. And people know, they always say, that's your baby. People tell me that even today, that's your baby. Yeah, and it is. You know, I that's my heart, man, because the people who came before me allowed me to be who I am. And I know that I'm going to do the same thing to anybody who works with youth in the city of Hudson. I'm going to give them pointers, and I'm going to listen to them, and I'm going to give them advice if they come to me. You know, if they seek me out and ask me, what do I think? You know, and it's so important, you know, to carry the torch and to be able to pass it when it's my time to pass it, you know, to pass it knowing that Hudson is still in good hands.
Do you have some people that are kind of, you're grooming any? Some of the kids?
I've groomed them a lot. Like the mayor, the mayor now, Kamal Johnson, I've had him since he was 12, 13 years old. Isaiah Hurd, he's a high school basketball coach. Now I had him when he was younger. I mean, I've mentored just about the last four generations in the city of Hudson. I mean, I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, 11 years old. I've been working with youth. And, you know, they all reach out to me. They all call me OG. What do I think? They ask me, what do I think about this? What do I think about that? You know, and I give them, you know, I allow them to be themselves. You know, I tell them, you know, like, you got to do it your way. The way I did it in my time is different than the way you do it, but I can offer assistance if you ever need it, you know. And I let them know that my phone is always available. You know, I'm always here to listen. You know, because it's a struggle. Working with youth is definitely a struggle, you know, because we have to meet them on their terms.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a big, important thing, I guess. You have to be, you don't want to be, like, talking down to them.
Exactly. Because we were once them, and we didn't want that.
It sounded like it's continued. I didn't realize the boxing program is there.
Oh, yes. We started it actually in 2005 at the Boys and Girls Club before they changed it over to the Hudson Youth Center. And once they changed it over to the Hudson Youth Center, I walked away because they, you know, they wanted me to reapply after being in it my whole life. Why do I need to reapply for a position which I've been doing my whole life? And you guys all know that. So we left out of there. We went TSL, Linda Musman. And they provided us a space at the Presbyterian Church on 4th and Warren, 3 days a week.
Okay.
And when I left the Boys Club that year in 2005, like 80 kids followed me.
Oh, wow.
And they just followed me there. And so the people who own the Moose Lodge now, they knew I was doing boxing down there. We were doing boxing and dance club. And we had like 80 youth that just came with me. The people who run the Moose Lodge, they said, we got space out here. You can come out here and boxing for free. So I moved out there, went out there, and I've been out there since 2006.
But I thought the Moose Lodge is that, I thought it's kind of closed down, no?
It's not closed down. It's closed down now because they're in the process of, it started like 2 years ago. They got ready to build an indoor sports complex.
Oh, really?
But with COVID and everything, had to stop construction. And then during that time, the bank held the money back because there was nowhere for them. With everything being closed down, they couldn't open it up to allow people in it because they wouldn't be able to make the money back. You know, and that's, you know, if everything is closed and you can't have people congregating to certain areas, you know, so that the bank held the money back. But I'm quite sure. Well, I think I heard recently that everything is being released. The money is being released so they could restart the building. And, yeah, but I've been teaching boxing there for 17 years now. Yes, going on 17 years. And over those years, we worked with well over 700 youth, young adults, kids, which majority now, they start with me when they're 12, 13 years old. A lot of them are 25, 30, 35. You know, a lot of them are in the military. A lot of them in law enforcement. And a lot of them are working in their communities and not-for-profits, giving back.
Can I ask you?
All the kids that competed in boxing tournaments, all of them graduated high school. There's like 70, 80 of those who competed in tournaments. Like a lot of them don't come to boxing just to fight. They come to learn the camaraderie, just being there. You know, some of them come to get in shape. Some of them, you know, some come from different reasons. Some just come just to hang out and watch. you know.
Could I ask you, if somebody wants to join you, I don't know if everybody's aware of it. Where do they go to apply or to, you know, how do they contact you?
Well, like I said, we're at the Hudson Moose Lodge on 100 Town Hall Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're slowly opening back up, you know, because of COVID and everything. We're taking it slowly. I mean, right now we're just trying to work with like 5 to 10 kids daily, you know, just so once the numbers, the COVID numbers go down and things, you know, we feel safe, because safety has always been our priority. Like nobody over the 17 years, nobody got harmed other than maybe you might want to get a bloody nose, the ones who are competing, but safety has always been our priority. And, you know, we just want to make sure that it's safe and that we continue to give the young adults and adults what they want, you know, what they come there for. You know, like I said, all of them don't come to compete in tournaments and become members of USA Boxing. Some just come to train, to work out, to learn, the self-confidence. That's a big thing what we do. We teach self-confidence. Nobody, all of them who fight, box, whatever, come to the gym, they know there's no fighting in the streets, none of that, because I won't train you, you know, but you have the right to defend yourself. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, once they start boxing, people know that they're with me, that they're in my gym. You know, they don't have problems anyway, you know.
Do you have girls as well as boys?
Sure do. I mean, it's crazy because a lot of the kids were going, well, you know, because all of them call me like dad, pops, because a lot of them don't have fathers. So they look at me as a father figure. So the ones making the decision to go in the military, because they've been watching other ones before them go in the military, whether it's the Navy, Air Force, Marines, we got National Guard, we got them all. We got every branch covered. And so some of the girls are like, hey, I'm going to go to college to become a trauma surgeon to work with people who get injured in the armed forces. And that was crazy. So, yeah, we have girls, young girls. They start, like, a lot of the guys who, like, some of them are professional boxers now. We got a couple of them that are professional boxers now. But most of the kids, when they start, when they're 13, 14, when they have kids, they're all in their kids' lives. And the kids grow up in the gym, like, coming in the gym in carriages and strollers, but now they're 5 and 6 years old, and they've been in the gym since they were babies, and they know how to throw certain punches and combinations because their fathers and our mothers have been in the gym that long. So it's like a tradition.
Wow, that's great. I can hear the excitement in your voice.
It is. I mean, it's my passion, man. I wish I would have started this a long time ago. It was crazy because when I grew up, I was a two-time Golden Glove champion, undefeated.
Oh, really?
And '80s, in the '82-'83.
Oh, wow. Could you have gone to... Were you ever...
My trainer died. Oh. My trainer was Freddie Schieber.
Okay.
And he was real good friends with Custom Model.
Okay.
So everybody thought I was going to end up going to Casco Gym to Custom Model, but I just didn't want to box no more, you know? And... Like I said, in 2005, one of my friends, Carlos Santos, who was one of my co-trainers, he was one of Custom Model's original fighters. He was one of the 5 original fighters that Custom Model had. And he came to me and said, let's start a boxing program. And I said, huh? And, you know, they said, yeah, let's start a boxing program. So he was working with me at the Boys and Girls Club, actually, as one of the rec aides. I hired him as one of the rec aides. And he said, let's start a boxing program. And that's what we did in 2005. We started from the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, wow.
And ever since, we're still going. We don't get no funding from nobody. Only person that has ever funded us was Linda Musselman and TSL in the beginning. They were giving us a stipend to do it, and they bought us the equipment we needed. And Rick Richter gave us, one time he got a donation from one of his friends to help, you know, buy boxing equipment. But over these 17, 18 years, everything is we've been paying out of our own pockets. And, you know, you're talking about thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. They take kids to different tournaments throughout all over the capital region and around far out to Ohio. I mean, staying overnight in hotels. Every year, kids got to get the boxing license, which was $50 at the time. But now it's like $80 that covers them for a year and protects them if they get an injury that, you know, they're covered by USA Boxing. The trainer's license, we have to have be certified every year, background checks and all that other stuff. You know, I got both of my licenses. I got my USA boxing license and my professional boxing license by the state of New York Athletic Commission.
Can I ask you?
I got to keep current with all those.
Can I ask you, are any of these young people compete in the Golden Gloves? They must have.
We've had several Golden Glove champions.
Oh, really?
I think we've had 12 champions. We've had a couple of our multiple champions. We've had best of the year. We had 2 New York State champions. We've had a silver medal and a bronze medal in the Empire State Games. We've had kids that were selected to represent the Adirondack region. We've had like four number one ranked in our region, Adirondack region, which goes from always from Ellenville up Kingston area, all the way up to Syracuse, up to all the way over to Watertown.
Wow.
So we've had some of the best of the best. We've had some of our pro fighters fought in Madison Square Garden, Barclays Center. I mean, yeah, we've do it all. We've had plenty of New York State champions. We've had it all.
Wow. So that's just one of the things. I mean, you're involved. Maybe you can tell us you're involved in other community activities in Hudson.
Yeah, I've worked pretty much in every organization around. I worked Catholic Charities. I worked in Twin County, Green County, Community Action in Green County. Right now, I work in Hudson Housing Authority. I was a human service coordinator there for a few years. Right now, I'm working for Spark of Hudson and Promise Neighborhood. They are two really, really, really important organizations. They do so much that people don't know about. I mean, unbelievable. And right now, with Spark of Hudson, they are pretty much trying to do a lot of stuff in the city of Hudson and the surrounding area to help people get on their feet. You know, one of the founders, she told me, Suzanne told me that her goal is to build a utopia, to get it back to the way it used to be. When you're talking about neighbors on the porch playing cards, block parties, safe places for kids. You know, those things are so important. And, you know, once I spoke with her, it was like an instant connection. Like, wow, she got the same goals as I do. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was so important. And Promise Neighborhood, they do, I mean, so much, man. Like, I had a friend that just recently got released from prison. And Promise Neighborhood, they provided him funding to get clothes and stuff. Like, who does that? Like, that, just simple stuff like that to help a person get back on his feet, to get his life together. Actually, he used money to get clothes and stuff to get an interview for a job, and he got the job, you know, and they told him anything you need will help you. I mean, those things, simple stuff like that, you know, is so important to help a person to get back into the community, to get their life back, you know, second chances.
Wow. Now, Spark of Hudson, I've looked at it. Maybe you... that's something that you work for. Aren't they supposed to be awarding certain number of families a certain amount of money? I think helping them.
They did that. That was something they did. Like, they started like a couple of years ago, and what they're right now, I know it's they started with 25 families, $500 a month for 5 years, but now I think they're up to 7. They did 50 more the following year, so now they're doing 75 families. $500 a month for 5 years, which is awesome. And, you know, I know a lot of the families who are getting that money, and it definitely impacted, made a big positive impact on a lot of those families.
Can I ask you?
During this time where there's food insecurity,
yeah.
And the COVID thing, you know, like, you know, a lot of them losing jobs or can't provide child care when the kids are home,
yeah,
for virtual learning and stuff. I mean, it impacted positive to a lot of families.
That's amazing. Aren't they involved with something about farmers or local farming? Or
it's crazy because I just had a Zoom meeting with the director from the Wally Farms, Alyssa. She's one of our she runs all that out there. And right now they asked me my assignment today, my task for today is because they want to hire people from the community. You know, it's from our community. They want to pay $25 an hour to start, to work farming, to learn farming. And they want to also hire youth as mentors, mentorship programs, the paid mentorship programs, not only for the farm, Wally Farms, but also for the old Columbia, I mean, the old West Iconic Diner that they recently bought. They're going to teach youth and the young adults, and they're going to hire them and teach them how to operate, run, how to cook, you know, things. So, they got so much important stuff coming down. So much that where they want to help people from the communities.
That's great, because I met you when I came to volunteer at the Salvation Army. And you sort of helped me. I walked in 2 weeks ago, and I'd never been in there, and you kind of showed me some basic things, remember? Even setting up.
You know, I started volunteering there last April, and it's like my baby now. Like, I love being there. I love being around people who volunteer, who give of themselves, you know, like, we don't all have to be there. You see how many different people that volunteer there. I mean, so many people from so many different backgrounds, and I learned so much about different people, like with Charlie. I didn't know Charlie. You know, I remember Charlie back when we were kids. You know, Charlie's 80-something years old. He used to work in Town Fair, but I didn't recognize him. You know, it's just like, wow, he worked in Town Fair for 30 years. And that guy, and you're talking about inspirational. This guy is there every day. And, you know, this, you got to love that, you know, when you see seniors and people coming in, you know, just to give back unconditionally. Like, they don't have to be there, but they want to be there. It's so important.
Well, I saw yesterday a couple that came in with a large amount of food. And they come in, I guess, once a week. And now Darcy, who's the director, after you left, a friend of hers, they're installing more shelves. So we're going to have more shelves so they can keep the food organized.
That is so awesome, man. I love it there, man. That's like my second home now. Other than the boxing gym, that's like my second home.
And the food, I had the best meatloaf I've ever eaten in my life yesterday.
Miss Faye,
and Lisa. Yeah, and I'm only there Tuesdays.
Yeah, the cooks are wonderful. Like, different days they have different cooks, and they all come in and they prepare healthy, nutritious meals for the whole community. I think they serve almost 100 meals a day.
Yeah.
And they also give out food at the food pantry, boxes of food with produce, dry goods, meat, just healthy snacks. Mondays and Fridays, every Monday and Friday, 8 to 10. And if, like I said, people walk in with, they don't have food, that's one thing I love about Darcy and Barbie. I mean, they'll give somebody food. If they come in the days that they're not the food pantry days, I've never seen them turn nobody down. That's why